Balance your trading strategy by adding futures. CME Group helps you manage risk and capture opportunities in all market environments. Capitalize on around-the-clock access to highly liquid global futures and options market across all major asset classes. Just visit your online broker and get started. Plug into valuable educational materials and trading tools and see what adding futures can do for you at cmegroup.com/onthetape. iConnections is the world's largest capital introduction platform in the alternative investment industry. iConnections membership-only platform brings together the asset management community, providing allocators and managers with the opportunity to connect both physically and virtually. With an impressive network of over 4,000 allocators and 900 managers, their community oversees an astounding $48 trillion and $16 trillion in assets, respectively. iConnections is also the driving force behind the alternative investment industry's most renowned in-person events. We invite you to join iConnections at their upcoming event, SALT iConnections in New York, taking place on May 20th through the 21st at the Glass House in New York City. This two-day event is packed with one-on-one cap intro meetings and content. To explore more about iConnections events and gain access to their members-only platform, visit iConnections.io.
When you're trading options, Fidelity has just what you need, with straightforward but powerful tools to help you select a strategy and execute your ideas. And they offer a wide range of information and insights to help simplify your trading experience. Have a question? Ask it live during their small classes and coaching sessions. Need information? Check out their educational videos, articles, and webinars. See why it's easy to trade options your way at Fidelity. Start now at fidelity.com/options.
Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. A very warm welcome to the On the Tape podcast. You know the voice. My name's Guy Adami. Today I'm joined by the great, the handsome, Danny Moses. Dan Nathan, in case anybody cares, is actually at the spring football game for Georgetown University. By the way, in case anybody is interested, next week, Monday night, Dan and I are flying to Miami after Fast Money. We're at the Focus Conference for FactSet, their first in-person conference since COVID. We get there Monday night. We leave on Thursday, and we're looking forward to that. So obviously, check out what's going on at FactSet. We highlight John Butters every Thursday. We're really excited to go to that conference. Danny Moses, how are you?
I'm good. Do you still have any type of eligibility left to play at Georgetown? Don't you still have some college eligibility?
You know, it's funny you say that. I'm 60 years old, as you know. But I'm 60 years old in age. In terms of mindset, like I'm still a 19, 20-year-old kid. So I'm convinced that I could get onto the field of play and kick everybody's ass, as I was in the 1980s, just to put it out
there.
Welcome
back. By the way, I actually think I wish you'd go back to Ireland. The trip was fantastic. I liked how some of my stocks and the shorts I were performing while you were over there. So I'm happy to buy you a ticket to send you back if you're willing to go.
And I'll say this in response. While I was in Ireland for the week, I had no expectations. I was looking forward to it. It surpassed any expectations I might have had to the upside. I loved it. It was a wonderful trip. And that gets us on to how we're going to get into this podcast. By the way, as I mentioned, this is the On the Tape podcast. So we were sitting there, my wife and I, we had about an hour or two to kill prior to an event. And I was flipping around the television set. Not a lot of good TV out there in Ireland, but I came across a movie channel. And sure enough, on the movie channel was The Guns of Navarone. This is a 1961 movie starring Gregory Peck, David Niven, and Anthony Quinn. These cats have to take out this German installation. It's a wonderful movie. It's based on a book, I believe, from Alistair MacLean's 1957 novel of the same name. But it got me thinking about sort of the subsequent movie made, it wasn't the second version of, but it was The Force 10 from Navarone. That was a 1978 movie featuring the same type of characters. This movie starred the great Robert Shaw. Now, you'll know Robert Shaw, of course, from Jaws. You also know Robert Shaw from The Sting. You'll also know him from The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. I'm sorry, Danny, I've been speaking a lot today. But this was a wonderful movie. It also starred Harrison Ford, Barbara Bach, for those who care, Edward Fox, Carl Weathers, and a couple of other people. Why do I mention that movie? Because this movie basically was based on the following notion. These cats, this Force 10, they had to take out a bridge. And in order to do that, they needed demolitions. They needed bombs and explosives. But when they got to the bridge, Mallory and Miller were like, we can't take this bridge out. There's no way. It's an impenetrable bridge. So what they decided to do, Danny, was go to a dam that was upstream, and if they couldn't take out the bridge with explosives, they'd take the dam out. They'd blow the dam up, the water would come, would take out the bridge. Okay, so that's what they do. So they wire up the dam, they set off the explosives, nothing happens. And Harrison Ford is apoplectic. He's like, what did you do? Nothing happened. And the explosives expert said, just wait a second, you need to let nature take over and run its course. And sure enough, over a couple minutes, the cracks in the dam got bigger and bigger. And finally, the force of the water was such that it knocked the dam out. The water came out. The bridge got knocked out. Boom. Off we go. Great movie. I encourage you to go to Blockbuster. I mention that because I think what we saw today, and today is Thursday, by the way, for you folks playing our home game, the 25th. What we saw in the form of the GDP print, but then the components of it, that's nature finally taking over and the forces of nature finally taking over. Now, what I will say, Danny, is I thought this would happen a long time ago. I've been Harrison Ford. I've been extraordinarily impatient. I think you've been more the be patient. It's just a matter of time. And quite frankly, in terms of some of the things we're seeing, that's exactly what's going on. Nature, Danny Moses, is finally taking over.
Right. So on the GDP, it's really just a report card of everything we know that's been happening. And it's really not that important, except that you can read the mosaic of the ingredients as a part of it. And also there is an inflation part of that GDP, the PCE, which is important that the Fed watches. So yeah, it's 1.6%. It grew versus 2.5%, but companies are still, you know, reporting their first quarter earnings that were living in that 1.6% GDP. So you kind of get a live look on how it impacted them or didn't. But when you break it down, the services component once again was strong and the goods component wasn't, right? And we're getting confirmation of that from earnings. And within services, the things that are non-discretionary, because you need healthcare, you need insurance, and those prices keep going up, are rising. And what's falling, I mentioned, is goods. And you look to the railroads that we're going to talk about. You look, you know, what's happening on shipments, they're going down. So to me, it's just an update and somewhat of a first quarter report card, but I don't think it has a massive impact. Pulling yourself out of GDP and going global here for a second, Bank of Japan, as we sit here now, has yet to have their meeting. They will have had their meeting by the time that this podcast is released. And the key number that everyone needs to watch on the yen, which they actually talk about over in Japan, is 157.60. We're sitting here just over 155 and a half-ish, give or take. And so, you know, again, the scary part is the reason I don't think there's more shorts being put on the yen at this exact moment is the fear of an intervention. But I worry about the day, Guy, that interventions don't work or that strong talk doesn't work. And market forces, to your point, nature takes over and blows through those things. And before you comment on that, one other thing that will happen for our episode next week, or there's two more things that are going to happen. They're really crucial in the setup, which is obviously the Fed meeting, which we're going to get, you know, the results out on Wednesday. But Yellen has two things on Tuesday. One is she's going before the Ways and Means Committee on Tuesday morning to talk about the 2025 budget asks. That's one. And on the same day, the Treasury is coming out with their QRA, which everyone on Investopedia has now gone out and looked what is quarterly refunding announced, which basically what she's going to issue, what type of bonds or notes she will be issuing. And she, you know, she threaded the needle at the end of last year, late fall, obviously that created a rally. First quarter, a little bit longer duration. Let's see what she does this quarter. But Guy, we've had three semi-okay, not great auctions in the last 3 days, a two-year, a five-year, and a seven-year. And I know I've gone on here, but I want to highlight one thing just to put things in perspective. This year's five-year auction was $70 billion. Last month's was $67 billion, right? They do this monthly. This week's interest rate on the five-year was much higher, was 4.659 versus 4.235. I just want people to understand that it doesn't matter what she says and does. We are refinancing and issuing paper at a much higher rate. So there, guy. I spilled a lot at you. I'd love
to
get your comments.
You know, and I appreciate that. First of all, I want to be crystal clear. What Danny outlined before, so GDP disappointing, but yet PCE running hot. I mean, what you're starting to see, and people will push against this, but this is something, Danny, that you talked about a couple years ago, the point that be careful, people, because stagflation was coming to a theater near you. Now, again, I want to be clear. Like, I thought all this would happen a lot sooner than it has. Again, I was the impatient Harrison Ford. You've been the patient one, said you just got to give it time, and it's starting to manifest itself, number one. Number two, in terms of dollar yen, again, I don't think anybody but you, maybe a handful of other people, thought the yen would continue to show the weakness that it has. And the Bank of Japan, I'll use the term, and people will say you're being hyperbolic. They're screwed, and I think they know it. If they don't know it, that's a problem in and of itself. But I think they probably have a pretty firm grasp on the fact that their currency is weakening at an alarming rate, number one. And in order to stem that, they can do one of two things effectively. They can intervene in their currency, which won't work, or they could start to raise rates in a meaningful way, which are really going to hamstring an already hamstrung economy. So they have to pick the lesser of two evils. And that's a conversation that you and I had with Mike Cow a couple weeks ago. That has been at the theater, and it's still playing. In terms of Janet Yellen and Treasury, yeah, they absolutely sort of threaded the needle a couple times. The market is starting to call bullshit. And what I'll say is the numbers that we're seeing, the market, I've never said that people won't buy our debt. That is not my point. What I've said consistently, Danny, is the market is going to demand a higher rate of interest in order to buy that debt. And that's what we're seeing. And that's why I thought rates would continue to go higher. And I think we'll continue to go higher. Just my personal thoughts on the whole thing.
Last week while you were in Ireland, there was a trilateral announcement from South Korea, Japan, and the U.S. saying we're monitoring the currency situation.
Yeah.
So if you don't think it's a big deal, not you, I'm saying if the listener doesn't think it's a big deal, just pay attention. You do not want this thing running away. And I wanted to do, before you went on your Siskel and Ebert 5-minute movie review, I was going to do a greetings, Professor Falcon, because there's a scene in War Games where the stuff is simulated to go off and nukes are flying all over the place and they're on the live line with someone who goes, we're still here.
Right.
We're still here. And my point is that all this shit has happened, guy, and we're still here, meaning the market's functioning fine still. So let's be, you know, there are companies that you can absolutely own that are doing an incredible job, not just navigating all these moves and fits and starts, the economy and rates and so forth, but are outperforming. And that to me is the exciting part. And I think the bifurcation that's taking place in real time on companies, to me, that's not a bearish thing. It's a bullish thing. It's exciting to find. And I go back to talk about ETFs and all this stuff. Forget it. Single stock picking, I think, really is emerging more and more, in my opinion. And it's fun because you can find the formula that works. Know what to avoid, not necessarily short, but know what to kind of go towards. And so this is one of these key quarters where Peter Buchvar does an incredible job in his Buchvar report of highlighting transcripts and certain key notes from these conference calls to tell you, for instance, we can go on a few of these right now, Guy, if you'd like, you know, names like Pepsi, which have done did a great job last year increasing prices, but now for the first time, still was a good quarter, you're starting to see the impact of what those prices mean to volumes. And those are the type of things where you need to start paying attention to, Guy.
No, I'm glad you brought up Pepsi because, you know, this is consistent with what we heard from McDonald's a couple months ago. I've been doing Fast Money now for over 17 years. Obviously, McDonald's is a stock we've talked about many, many, many times. I had never in my tenure doing the show heard them talk about their customer having trouble trading down, not being able to pay. McDonald's had become problematic in terms of price. That is a first for me. And then it manifests itself in Pepsi. And we're not telling you to trade these stocks either way. What we're both trying to point out is it's now inflation is impacting companies that historically we haven't heard from, and they're no longer able to pass on those associated costs to the customer, which by definition, Danny, is going to start to impact margins. And we're starting to see it around the edges. I don't want to get too, again, hyperbolic here, but we're clearly seeing it around the edges.
Yeah, you start to see names like Chipotle. And they're a little bit like Walmart in the sense of they can pretty much attract any type of consumer. Granted, it's not that cheap, but it's cheap enough where people, they think they can find value. Think about that turnaround since the food poisoning thing from several years ago. It's approaching $100 billion market cap. But, you know, names that are kind of bobbing and weaving within that. Look at GM. And we're obviously going to talk about the auto sector as it relates to Tesla here shortly. But look what Mary Barra has done here in the last 6 months. And she announced the accelerated buyback in November, right, of $10 billion. That stock has gone from the high 20s to the mid 40s, 50%. And you had time to basically buy it. And they just reported earnings, unlike some auto companies, which, you know, are not doing well, that are trading on some other metric we're going to talk about. What is the multiple of earnings that you think GM trades at right now, Guy, without looking?
Five.
It's insane. Five. Five. Now, five. Okay, what reason would it be five? Would it be because it's not sustainable? Whatever. All I know is the balance sheet is decent. They are returning a ton of capital. They raised the dividend. So I don't know. Call me crazy. But we said back 5 months ago when they announced it, you know what? Relative, stop worrying about a Tesla. Just use as an example. You want auto exposure, of which Musk is trying to convince people that's not. Go buy GM.
Yeah.
And so anyway, you look at the haves and have nots. And that's my point. Companies that have done a great job kind of navigating through these.
Well, you had brought up GM a while ago and you brought it up correctly. And it's been a big winner. It's not coincidental that over a period of the last 6 months or so, Tesla's been upper left, lower right, and GM's been lower left, upper right, if you can visualize that in terms of the stock performance. So I want to say something, and I mentioned it on Fast Money earlier this week. It's not all auto manufacturers that have been mired sort of going sideways for a period of time. I mean, Ford's been the same stock price up and down, but if you went to bed 30 years ago and woke up today, Ford's effectively the same price. With that said, there is a company, there is an auto company that's just been acquitting itself extraordinarily well, and that's Toyota, because the market believes in them. Once the market starts to believe in Ford and GM, and once they start to give them the benefit of the doubt, I think these stocks are going to surprise people. Tesla earlier this week traded down to $140, almost on the screws. They reported earnings earlier in the week. The stock rallied higher. As we're sitting here today, it's either side of $168. And I get it. I see the relief rally and I understand it. As a matter of fact, on the market call, we talked about not pressing the short anymore. And it was probably the right thing if you were short to give yourself some flexibility to buy some back and allow yourself to trade. This is still a stock that's been in a significant downtrend since the fall of 2021, when it was north of $400. So it's lost more than 60% over that same period of time. I saw the quarter. Free cash flow was a disaster by any metric. Margins were a disaster. What the market got excited about, Danny, was them saying, them being Tesla, robo-taxis were coming faster than the market realized. We'll see if that happens, but that's the hope right now in terms of Tesla. Thoughts on that?
Well, let me go a few quotes from Musk. One was, we're putting the actual auto and automobile, I think he puts the word fraud in fraudster. That's my first comment. The second comment, of which Adam Jonas made a comment, Adam Jonas was surprised that really, you know, car sales didn't come up and deliveries really didn't come up. Yeah. Guess what, Adam? You had the ability to ask any question that you wanted, but you didn't. So the investor relations guy, Martin, is now leaving after having been there 7 years. We know the CFO left, obviously, last year after being there 13 years. So now Musk can completely control the narrative, right? And I'm sure Martin's leaving because things must be so great because he's so excited to talk with investors and Wall Street analysts. You know who should be the new IR person? Adam Jonas should leave Morgan Stanley and be the investor relations person. Let me just leave it at that. So numbers were terrible. He's pointing everyone to this August 8th robo-taxi. This has been going on for years, Guy. I'm not even go into it. All you know is the core business. To your point, I think burnt $2.2 billion, or the whole company burnt $2.2 billion in cash flow. Auto sales missed, even though we knew the delivery. We already knew that number. Margins were worse. Everything was worse. What happens on June 13th is they're going to re-vote because they're reincorporating in Texas to vote on Musk's comp package. One planted question came up, and it was basically to Musk, if you don't get 25% ownership, would you consider leaving? You know, all that bullshit. And he made a comment. He goes, well, just to be clear, the auto business could run without me. Yeah, obviously, the thing's being run into the ground. But as far as the future projects, I would consider that to be at risk if it didn't. Well, June 13th is the vote. So we don't get another quarterly report or a second quarter number of cars that were delivered, you know, until June 30th. We don't get that. Obviously, he's going to have this vote and he'll probably get this thing approved again. Potentially this $56 billion package. And I want to remind people, the original package in 2018, everyone said great because the stock's up, was really market cap related and adjusted EBITDA related. It had nothing to do with, quote, net income. Granted, that did come, but just keep in mind, a lot of it was basically tied to, quote, stock price. And that kind of, so all you need to know is that everything about him is a stock price that creates the image for the company. So yeah, you get a rally here, you get short covering. I don't think it's going to last, to be frank. We've had these fits and starts where you've had a run up to 400, come back, run up to 300, come back, run up to 200. I think we're just in one of those still in a downtrend here. So again, shame on a lot of these sell side analysts. I don't rely on them for really pointing out the obvious. But guy, I got to tell you, man, like this cult is so blindly powerful. And it's nothing to do with fundamentals at this point to the people that own it. The people that still own the stock or buying it do not care about fundamentals. That's fine. So you're not going to shake them when numbers keep missing. You have to understand that. But I fear for the people that do, because someday they're going to wake up and they're all going to get Musk. And it's just amazing to me that from a capital markets perspective, what this company has done, from a Wall Street perspective, how they suck up to the guy. So I can go on and on, obviously, for a long time on it. So I did cover some into the print. I've been shorting it for the last 2 days. It's been a great short, obviously, relative to the market. Forget about it for the last, several years.
It's been an amazing short relative to the broader market. We've pointed it out a number of times. You know, until recently, you're talking about a NASDAQ and an S&P 500 at all-time highs. And you were talking about a stock in the form of Tesla, which, again, made its all-time high in the fall of 2021, I think-ish, or around there, north of $400. And at its trough earlier this week, when it was trading at 140, basically, again, on the screws, you're talking about a stock that almost 70% lower than its prior all-time high. So I don't care what anybody says. I mean, that is a disaster of a stock performance on what was a great market. So we'll see. I'm sort of with you. I'm not a hater. I have no view on Elon Musk whatsoever. I know you and Dan both do. That's fine. I think there's a chance the stock sort of levitates a little bit more, but you're not looking for where to enter a long position. I still think you're looking where you either put on another short or exit what was maybe a timely long position into earnings, Dan.
Listen, my thing with him is it's not political. So I separate that completely. But when he says something like we expect higher sales in 2024, it's almost impossible based upon the cuts that they're making and the quarter that they already reported. My point is that I'm a corporate governance person. I'm a law and order person. I want to believe that we're being watched out for and the companies are being honest and truthful. And I just feel like investors get burned in companies like this over time because they're not being policed correctly, right? And there is nobody, quote, checking him. That's it. Has nothing to do with who he is. It has to do with how he acts. And that's it.
Well, I mean, again, you can believe all you want. I mean, at the end of the day, if you look at the stock price, the last couple of days notwithstanding, it has not been a great place to be.
With CME Group's micro-sized futures and options, you can access the same transparency and liquidity of the benchmark contracts with less upfront financial commitment. Diversify your portfolio and manage your exposure with the flexibility of CME Group micro contracts in crypto, metals, FX, energy, and equity indices. Learn more about what adding futures can do for you at cmegroup.com/micros. iConnections is the world's largest capital introduction platform in the alternative investment industry. iConnections membership-only platform brings together the asset management community, providing allocators and managers with the opportunity to connect both physically and virtually. With an impressive network of over 4,000 allocators and 900 managers, their community oversees an astounding $48 trillion and $16 trillion in assets, respectively. iConnections is also the driving force behind the alternative investment industry's most renowned in-person events. We invite you to join iConnections at their upcoming event, Salt iConnections in New York, taking place on May 20th through the 21st at the Glass House in New York City. This two-day event is packed with one-on-one cap intro meetings and content. To explore more about iConnections events and gain access to their members-only platform, visit iConnections.io. Trading options might be new for you, or maybe you've been doing it for a while. Either way, Fidelity is your go-to source for clear and relevant information about trading options. For example, ask Fidelity professionals questions during their live small classes and coaching sessions and learn more with educational videos, articles, and webinars. Plus, with Fidelity's straightforward tools and technology, you'll find it easier than ever to trade options your way. See what's waiting for you at fidelity.com/options. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request.
Airlines, until recently, have been an interesting place to be. And Tim Seymour talks about this on Fast Money. I say it as well. I mean, these are, at best, trading instruments. I don't think they're investments, is my sense. You saw some of the disasters out of JetBlue. I mean, I can go on and on. Boeing, and this is a mea culpa on me. You know, I thought Boeing, when the CEO announced he was stepping down, that stock went from about 187, I think, to 196. And I thought that was it. That was the all clear. And I was pretty convinced that Boeing would sort of levitate to the mid-220s. That's obviously wrong. I mean, that's been an unmitigated disaster. But you have some thoughts on the airlines as well. And again, when the economy's great, I mean, they do well. When the economy turns, and again, say what you want about GDP, but you're starting to see some signs. I mean, this is going to be a tough place to be, is my sense.
Yeah, so you have some of these airlines like Southwest and American, which are really prisoner to Boeing, right? And some like JetBlue, which only have Airbus, right? And they all have their issues, whether it's, you know, on the planes themselves, capacity, routes that they have or whatever. But you're 100% right. These are trading stocks. None of these stocks have even recovered from the pre-COVID levels, just to be clear, right? When you go back and look, some are performing way worse than others. The ones that are doing well, again, look to GDP. Look, when you look at the sales breakdown globally, you know what people are spending on. It's services, it's international travel. It's not a coincidence that United and Delta have done very well in terms of, we know what their routes are and so forth like that. So again, you don't want to buy an ETF related to the airline because they're all very, very different. But you bring up the point that we haven't even seen a recession yet with these companies. You know, the airlines drive me crazy because 9 times out of 10, if it gets really bad, they get bailed out by the government. And 9 times out of 10, it's really good. They gouge the consumer and raise ticket prices, and they're just trading vehicles, and they're overly cyclical companies. And some have fixed their balance sheets more than others going forward, but again, there's a lot of debt. Some have decided to lease planes instead of own them. I won't go into all the details, but again, it's a pretty good roadmap for what's happening in the global economy if you take a look at, you know, at the airlines themselves and where the consumer is spending money, for sure.
I know we seem to, and it's probably true, that we're a much different economy today than we were sort of 100 years ago or so, when the Dow transports, the transport theory, when transports were such an important part of the economy. They're still, I would submit, a very important component of the economy. And I think they can speak to how strong things are or how weak things are. And I think they are, in a lot of ways, a leading indicator. The IYT, I don't think, is a well-constructed ETF. I want to say 43% of it are the three U's. Uber at 18%, Union Pacific Railroad at 17%, and UPS around 9%. So that makes up a lion's share. You throw FedEx, Delta, Old Dominion, a couple other railroads in, and there you go. That's your ETF. But what I'll tell you is the IYT, I think, has made a textbook double top. Again, the prior high going back to the fall of 2021, like many things, the recent high, I want to say, in mid or so March. So I want to keep an eye on that. With that said, there's some things in the same space that have caught your attention in the form of like a J.B. Hunt and an Old Dominion. Speak to that, Danny Moses.
Yeah, so we got J.B. Hunt last week. Obviously, Intermodal, that was weak. We got Old Dominion, which is down in Norfolk Southern. All do different things. Norfolk Southern, obviously, is the rail company, right? And they're down, and they're basically confirming what we're seeing is just kind of a slowdown in shipments of goods in general and servicing the trucks that service those and carry those things and so forth. So it's just another anecdote in terms of what we're seeing out there, which, again, you know, is in the numbers. And my point about creating all this mosaic that's kind of out there, and no two companies are the same, but I think we're going to continue to see that type of weakness, basically confirming a slowdown in GDP that might be coming here. And so in real time, I would say, who cares, again, about the 1.6% number? But I think we all kind of feel like, it doesn't feel like things have gotten better in the economy since the first quarter. Keep an eye on one other company, which, you know, again, confirms a lot of this, is Visa, you know, which is a great read for the consumer. U.S. is strong. Asia is weak.
Let me say this. You know, we have hammered home on our different shows that we do March 8th 100 times. And I mentioned March 8th, so with a Friday. On that day, NVIDIA made an all-time high, reversed, lost approximately $240 billion with a B of market cap. And although the stock made a run in the ensuing week or so back to those levels, we never breached those levels. And that engulfing pattern that we saw was very strong. And obviously, you've seen what's happened to NVIDIA since, the last couple of days notwithstanding. We saw a similar move in Facebook. I know it's called Meta. I call it Facebook. But when you have, again, Danny, $150 billion worth of market cap lopped off, you have to sort of take notice. Again, I thought the Facebook quarter was fine. What obviously scared people was the guide and the spend. We've seen it before. Thoughts on the importance, if at all, of Facebook?
People want them to transform the company. Obviously, they're doing a lot of stuff with metaverse, AI, and you know, they came out and said, we're going to need to spend money to get where we want to get. And I would say that in their core businesses, yes, it was decent, but they are, I believe, seeing a slowdown, I think, in ad spend to a degree. But both Netflix and Meta got hit. And if you're a believer in AI and you're a believer in these things, Netflix is not AI, but my point is, if you're a believer in these companies' long-term plans, then those are buying opportunities. But again, this proves the point, Guy, that these stocks run unchecked for a period of time that aren't really trading on fundamentals, but trade on momentum. And I've talked about before, when momentum breaks on some of these names, what is the buy point? Inevitably, they'll find the buy point. These stocks, I think, are both off their lows, obviously, here. Meta didn't say anything, I think, that really shocked people and say, we want to spend money. I guess people took that as a positive for NVIDIA, because the CapEx that I would imagine Meta would be spending, I think, would probably go to NVIDIA. So you could take good and bad from that call. And on Netflix, they've changed their model two or three times, of big seminal changes in the business. So what if they're not going to report sub growth anymore, sub numbers, at least on a quarterly basis, because they're moving, the model is transitioning so much. They're going into live sports and doing all those things. So people obviously took that as a negative and sold the stock off. But again, at some point, it's obviously a buying opportunity. So I guess it just points out that you just can't have an unchecked run up in some of these names and continued momentum. And earnings are always a chance to kind of recalibrate and look. And, you know, I think they're both good companies, Meta and Netflix, and I'd probably be buying them on substantial dips for sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting move. And for you technical analysts out there, what we created again with Facebook or Meta, you know, this open below 450 creates a bit of an island. Now, Danny and I are doing this on Thursday afternoon into the close. So there's still a chance that Facebook makes up that ground and closes, you know, north of 450. But what I will say is pay attention. And Danny is right in pointing out that that spend that Facebook mentioned, NVIDIA wins to that. And that's one of the reasons the stock rallied the way it did. But again, a lot of moving parts here. One of the things that you and I have been sort of hammering home correctly, incorrectly, correctly, is the fact that resources are on the move. And I want to talk about copper in a second, which has been off to the races. But BHP Billiton made a bid for $39 billion for Anglo American. So this is the mining space. And this sort of lends itself, Danny, to all the things that we've been talking about. You know, the mining space is in play. The miners have not performed. They have not obviously kept up with the underlying commodity. But when you start to see M&A in the space, buckle up. And this is, I think, is what Stan Druckenmiller was probably looking at a few months ago. This is what David Einhorn was probably talking about. Gold's in play for a myriad of different reasons. But when you see, again, M&A in the space, you got to peek your head up and say, something's going on.
Oh, it's a real offer. I mean, you have them already planning within the offer to spin out their iron ore and platinum assets out of South Africa. They're going to sell their De Beers diamond business. By the way, on diamonds, I don't know if you're paying attention to this lab-grown diamond business, but from what I'm hearing, it's hard to really discern between the two. So they probably want to get rid of their diamond business anyway. Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Centerview are advising Anglo, and UBS and Barclays, just, you know, are advising BHP. I mentioned that because we've talked about the resurgence of M&A and IPOs and so forth. And so copper prices, because of this deal and the excitement around it that the business are involved in, are at two-year highs again. And you look at all commodities, you know, continue to run here. And I think you and I have been focusing on that. And I'm half joking when I say, if you're trading copper on the LME, be careful, because if it runs too much, they might cancel your trades after what happened a couple of years ago. But no, listen, we've talked about this in the end, commodities in general and miners, there could be some M&A. And I think we could see it spill over, obviously, into the gold miners, you know, as well. And so you're seeing the whole mining sector trade up quite substantially. You've been on Newmont for a while, Guy. I believe you've mentioned that name. And look at that stock today, right?
So eyes and ears are coming. Newmont rallied, this announcement helped, but they also rallied on their earnings release. So, you know, you don't see Newmont Mining move 13% in a day, especially on a day where the broader market is obviously doing what it's doing. So again, I want to be crystal clear. I think the miners are in play. You look at Agnico Eagle Mines. Danny has mentioned in terms of other ways to play it through the PHYS, the Sprott physical gold. That works. And I've said this a number of times. I think if Danny and I are right in our assessment, there could be a scenario where GLD, the ETF, actually doesn't work and these other things do, but that's probably for another show. The last thing you wanted to talk about, and you know, I played with his cube for a while. That would be Rubik's cube, and I was still, you know, there are people that can solve that thing in like less than 5 seconds, and then there are people that do it blindfolded, and then there are people that do it with three different ones, and they juggle them and able to do it. It's really amazing. I guess at a certain level, it's just a math problem. I haven't advanced to that level, but thoughts on Rubrik, the IPO that was priced earlier this week, and I guess it's a good sign that some things are coming to market.
I really, when I saw the name, all I could think of was the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, when Michael Caine turns to Steve Martin, he says, Rubrik, put the cork on the fork. And Rubrik goes, can I go to the bathroom? Thank you. Anyway, one of my all-time favorite movies. So anyway, that's what I thought of when I saw it, was Rubrik. But yeah, Rubrik came public, you know, $6 or $7 billion company owned by Lightspeed and Microsoft. Data software, whatever. They raised $750 million on this deal. It priced at 32. It's trading at 38. The original range was 28 to 31. Again, Goldman Sachs, Barclays, Citi, Wells on this IPO. I will just note that they lost $354 million last year on revenues of $628 million. I just thought I'd mention that out there as we approach the $6 or $7 billion market cap. So I'm not trying to trade that name, or I don't really know the name that well. It just, people want to see IPOs start to work, and this one did, for people to get excited about the market. So certainly take it as a positive.
No, I think, listen, there are positives out there. I mean, again, if you look at the energy space, the big cap integrated names have had a decent little run, pulling back a little bit, but you know, some of the themes we've talked about are seemingly coming to play. And I will say that I don't think the market, Danny, is paying enough attention to, forget about gold, which I've always said is a commodity in name only, because it really doesn't have an end use like a copper does, like obviously a crude oil, a gasoline, a wheat, a corn, any of those other things, you know, some of the base metals that we talk about. With that said, there are a lot of things going on in the very inflationary commodity sector that, again, I don't think the market is paying enough attention to. And I do think it's fascinating that last year in October, November, people looking for 6 rate cuts in 2024. We're sitting here at the end of April. And now, as you mentioned earlier in the show, you might get one in later in the year. And when I say later, like December, November, December later. And I'm not convinced the market's prepared for that. And I'm certainly not convinced, Danny, that the market's prepared for what I think is the inevitability of 10-year yields reapproaching the levels we saw in the fall, which were either side of 5%.
All kind of scary to think about. On your gold comment, I would say they tried to take gold down a couple days and it held. And that's in the face of higher inflation. Obviously, as we're seeing here, Guy, gold is outperforming again. And so it feels like gold is on very strong footing. You're always going to get that retail fluff that comes in at the end of a kind of a hype period, but feels like it's a buy on weakness kind of thing there. And as far as rates go, again, is it inflation that takes rates higher on the longer end, or is it supply and demand, or a combination of both potentially? I'll tell you, when The Big Short was going on, in the book, the scene where we went to St. Patrick's Cathedral and sat on the steps in 2008, and we realized at that moment, and looking down, honestly, that it was much worse than we even could have thought. What we realized was that we knew Lehman would do poorly. We didn't think they'd go out of business. We knew AIG would do poorly. Everyone was unaware of what was on these people's balance sheet. And I mention that because even if someone's right about rates moving higher because of a failed treasury auction, careful what you wish for. And I'm not saying anyone's wishing for that, but careful, because I don't know, honestly, Guy, and that's why I do love gold so much and you love gold. There are very few things that I can say for certain which will outperform in a God forbid scenario like that. And it's gold. In my opinion, it's probably Bitcoin to a degree. And so I know I just took that and made it a very dramatic thing. But my point is that your brain, with what we do and try to help people in the markets, can only go so far. You make a comment like, I think rates are going to the moon because there's going to be a failed auction. There's too much supply and people all of a sudden are going to care about $35 trillion in debt and how we're running these deficits. Should they care? Yes. Will they care? I don't know. But when they do, Guy, I don't know if I want to, I don't know if we're going to be on TV anymore if that.
Well, we're going to find out, but I'll say this. Yeah. You know, we're sitting here again on Thursday afternoon. Later this evening, we have the NFL draft, which I am fascinated by.
You're also eligible for that.
I am always eligible for that. Okay. So if any team wants to take an aging safety and or tight end, I'm your huckleberry. But With that said, as we approach, again, fast approach the NFL season, there are two teams that have really captured my attention in terms of what they've done, and I'll give them to you. I think the Falcons, who were miserable last year, I think they're going to surprise people. And I don't think Houston surprised people, but I think they've gotten themselves a lot better. So if you're looking for early NFL season potential playoff and or Super Bowl teams, I'm going to throw those two at you, Demo, ahead of the draft. Thoughts?
I love Houston. Love Houston. We'll talk about it as we get closer to the season, but I love that whole team. I love what they've done. I love everything about that team. So they're certainly going to be right there. And listen, Baltimore upgraded as well. So I think they're reloaded and loaded again. So those are the two teams in the AFC for sure.
Next week, we will be on the verge of another Kentucky Derby. So I'm sure you will bring forth some of your selections. Don't bring us chalk. You never do. So I look forward to that. And again, I look forward to what's to come. I mean, the markets are fascinating, people. So buckle up. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, I do think, Danny, nature is finally starting to run its course. And I'm interested to see what are the knock-on effects are going to be. So as always, you sexy man, thanks for joining.
Right back at you.
Thanks again to our presenting sponsors, CME Group, iConnections, and FactSet.
If you like what you heard, make sure you hit follow and leave us a review. It helps other people find the show, and we also want to hear from you. Email us at contact@riskreversal.com.
Derivatives are not suitable for all investors and involve the risk of losing more than the amount originally deposited and any profit you might have made. This communication is not a recommendation or offer to buy, sell, or retain any specific investment or service.